your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Guy James here with you on this Friday afternoon. Thank you. Thank you to everybody for joining us here on the program this afternoon. We're going to try and have a great show for you today. We invite you to give us a call, toll free, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254, and we hope you'll join in on the program today. Lots of things happening in the news. Never a shortage of things to talk about on the program nowadays. Number one, just a few minutes ago, I saw those pictures of Catherine Harris. Did anybody see those latest pictures of Catherine Harris on the internet schmoozing up to that reporter? My God. Can that woman embarrass herself any more than she already has? I wonder. Can she really? If you haven't checked those out, go to Democratic Underground and check out the photos being posted of Catherine Harris schmoozing up to this news reporter. Hardly the type of photos you would want taken if you're running for the United States Senate. Which one of those Mrs. Robinson type things there is what it is. I think the picture says it all. Oh, yeah. And, what else we got going on today? We had a CNN reporter thrown out of the welcoming ceremony down at, over at Yale University today for asking a question of Mr. Hu from China. Threw him out for asking a question. Free speech in this country. Isn't that funny? We talk about the Chinese not having free speech, and a guy comes over here, and all of a sudden, we're stifling free speech, too. I got news for you. Some free speech has been stifled in this country long before that guy got over here. But what about that yesterday? Bushy Boy is out there talking about freedom of speech yesterday and welcoming Mr. Hu from China, bragging about free speech here in America and hoping that the Chinese will work on their human rights record and their free speech, and I'll be damned, bragging about free speech here in America, and they drag that poor Chinese woman off from the Fong Gong group for asking Mr. Bush to stop the killing, to ask Mr. Hu to stop the killing of the Fong Gong people in China. And she's exercising her free speech rights here in this country, and the Secret Service drags her away. And I understand they're going to charge her with a felony today. Free speech. Ah, yes. Isn't it great? Isn't it just great? What else on the what's on the wire for today? Oil. Ooh. Did I read that? Did I read that right? Oil really hit $75 a barrel today? Can that be? June futures of oil, $75 a barrel? Ooh. And, you know, speaking of that, I was in the car a little earlier than the afternoon. Driving down the road, and naturally I had to go over and see what Pig Boy had to say. And old Pig Boy was almost gleeful talking about the price of gasoline. He is just happy as hell that the oil companies are gouging the American public, and just, you know, he thinks it's a wonderful thing. Capitalism at its very finest. He defends the large corporation gouging the American public every time he gets a chance. I don't know. And, of course, he was making fun of the we liberals and you progressives, too. Those of you that don't want to call yourself liberal. Anyway, he's saying, here we have the price of gasoline way up, and you libs were over there talking about no war for oil, no war for oil, that we were gone to war for oil. What about it now, Mr. Limbaugh, the drug junkie says. Yeah, Rush, what about it? What about it? Yes, we did say no war for oil. So now we got the oil, and the oil companies are getting $3 a gallon. What's news about that? I'd say it again. No war for oil. What's that got to do with the price right now? Nothing. And I would caution you, some of my conservative friends send me email telling me the price of gas is way up because of, oh, there's a shortage of ethanol, there's a shortage of the additives, of course, the old line that we always hear, there's a shortage of refineries, there have been no new refineries built in this country for 30 years because the liberals won't let them, there's no drilling going on in the Anwar Preserve, there's not enough drilling going on in the Gulf of Mexico, there's not enough going on out in Colorado with the shale. We've got more oil reserves in the coal shale than they've got in the Middle East. Oh, my God. You got any other excuses you want to come up with? Folks, the price of gas is $3 a gallon because they've got you bent over the hood of the car and they're sticking it to you. That's why the price of gas. You know why it's that high? Because it can be. Because they say so. That's why. I heard one of the oil executives today complaining. They were talking about that $400 million retirement benefit to that ass from ExxonMobil. Then, you know, how dare the public complain about that? How dare they complain about it? Didn't hear the public down when gas was down, or when oil was down around $10, $12 a barrel, didn't hear the public complaining then, did you? Well, yeah. I you know, fine. Rush and all your little friends and all you wannabe millionaires out there, all you suckers that got suckered into voting for Mr. Bush, A, because he's this good, godly man, and B, because he had all this business experience, the first president to have an MBA, and third, because he was an oil executive, you know, and knew all about the oil business, and that would certainly help all the Americans out. All of you that voted for him for that, how do you feel now? Record profits, $36 billion to ExxonMobil last year, $36 billion. And it's amazing to hear the spin that goes on about that. I heard one today say, well, gee, that was only 10% profit. They took in $360 billion, and they only made $36 billion in profit. It's not all that high, really. How high should it be if $36 billion isn't enough? What should it be? Should it be $60, $70, $80 billion? How much of these people, you know, I heard from another one today. I got this little email thing going back and forth with this guy from Wyoming. Don't ask me why I do this. I don't know why I do it. I guess I just can't resist, but I'm going to have to learn to resist because I really don't have time for people like this. But, you know, writing and telling me, well, we libs are against capitalism, and we want to see the rich people getting taxed. Now, here's a guy that says he's not rich, that he makes about $35,000 a year, and he certainly doesn't mind. He hates the fact that we're against the really rich people getting off paying taxes, paying their fair share. And the reason they talk like that, these right-wingers, most of them anyway, is because they have been suckered beyond belief. The old three-card Monty game, they get the vote, they vote for the Republican because, you know, well, low taxes, low taxes, low taxes, and it's got nothing to do with the poor schmo making $35,000. It's got nothing to do with them at all. It's all about getting millions of tax relief for the guys that make in millions. But they've got all these poor schmoes convinced that, well, someday they'll be in that position, too. They'll make those millions of dollars, too. That's what it's all about. Someday, I may be in that position, and then I won't have to pay out those millions of dollars of tax. We're going to talk about the tax situation a little bit later today, just kind of going over the current events today. What else? Anything else in there? Carl Rove. Do you think Rove might get indicted today? I don't know. And a friend of mine asked me to mention that go out and buy your sweetheart some flowers today or say something nice to her. It's not a special day of any kind that I know of, but, you know, the ladies really love attention. And this is just a word for the wise. All you fellas out there, if you haven't given your sweetheart enough attention, be sure and do that. We forget that sometimes, don't we? We guys are just a bunch of crude ruffians. And as I've always said, if you girls knew what we guys were really like, if you knew what was really on our minds all the time, you wouldn't have a thing to do with us. So, enough of that subject. Is Karl Rove going to get indicted today? Is it going to be what a lot of us have called Fitzmas? I love that name. Prosecutor Fitzgerald. Is it going to be a joyous day, the day he indicts Karl Rove? And it's beginning to look like he is going to prosecute Karl Rove. I noticed David Schuster took a look at the recent court filings by Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald and suggested Karl Rove is likely to be indicted. And Schuster made 3 points about it, and I'll just go over them real quick. The latest court documents, for the first time, do name Karl Rove as a subject of the investigation. And number two that Schuster named, the court documents go out of their way to say that Rove will not be called as a witness in Scooter Libby's trial, even though Rove is a key part of the narrative. Schuster notes that this is done when prosecutors want to leave open the possibility of later charging that particular subject in a separate case. And number three on Schuster's list, Rove is referred in court documents as Official A. And Schuster says, in every single case we have found, that prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, when he designates somebody as Official A in an indictment, that person eventually does get indicted themselves. So, what about it? Is Karl going to get his today or soon or whatever? And I know so many of you keep close track of this, and so it's all crashing down on them now. The question is, will Junior Bush and Cheney escape exposure in their roles in this massive cover-up, which is taking place in the White House and the Vice President's office? Will they escape? It appears, to me anyway, that the Valerie Plame incident is, after all, the catalyst for Fitzgerald's investigation. It's what started the whole thing. And he's been following the trail of her outing from the very beginning. And as many of you will recall, I'm sure, we said back then it would indeed lead to the desk in the Oval Office. I said that. Several other people said that. At least to Cheney's office and probably to Bush's office. We knew then, and it's now being proven, that our warnings about this gang occupying the People's House were a bunch of unsavory characters that were, for all intents and purposes, devoid of ethics and morals and scruples, whatever adjective you want to use to describe decent human behavior, they don't have it. And we knew coming into this mess that these people weren't worthy of the trust of the people of the United States, and that their motives for wanting power were, as I see it, they were self-serving and somewhat decadent. In regular societal circles, men like these end up in prison for white-collar crimes or worse. And they're the kind who have a different view of decent behavior than your average man or woman. They really care not about the adverse effects they have on other people's lives when doing their dirty work. They don't care at all. They're sociopaths of the highest order and really should be shunned by people of any type of upright moral character at all. They should be shunned. The shame of it all is that it's taken so long for the public to find out about their treachery and their evil ways in this Bush administration. And for many decades, we've come to rely upon the nation's press to flush out criminals like these men and expose them for what they are. They're the Benedict Arnolds, the Alger Hisses, the Spiro Agnews, the Richard Nixons of the world. And those guys were all caught and exposed and taken down after having members of the press suspect them of evil deeds and expose them. But this time, so it appears, to me anyway, that the press was completely complicit in the crimes of these men. They willfully participated in the cover-up. Judith Miller looked like she was a martyr, gone to jail for however many days it was. But Judith Miller, it appears, is every bit the traitor to the people of this country, as is Cheney, Bush, Rove, Libby, and whoever else they flush out of the bushes, if you'll pardon the pun. These are not people who came to the office with good intentions and went astray, but got off the path. No, sir. These are people who swore their solemn oath to uphold the Constitution, knowing full well that they intended to shred it at the first opportunity. These are the men who took office and had an agenda already decided upon that would be devastating for the people of the United States. They had a plan formed years in the past to take this country to war and squeeze money from the Treasury like no one ever dreamed of before. They had a plan to concentrate every bit of the power of the government right in the Oval Office. Checks and balances to them were absolutely contemptible. When Bush made that famous statement early on in his reign of terror about a dictatorship being okay as long as I'm the dictator, he was deadly serious. Because that is exactly what these people had in mind. And as it turns out, there were two ideas of how this dictatorship would work. I really believe that there were two ways that they thought it would work, with two groups, really. Bush himself thought he'd actually get to be the, and if you'll pardon me saying this, he'd actually get to be the decider, if you will. He thought he was going to make the rules to suit himself and be little King George, the arrogant little king that would make everyone bow to him and kiss his ring and obey his every command because he was the ruler of the universe, that type of thing. I think that was his idea. But Cheney and Rove and Rumsfeld and company, they had completely other ideas. They were going to set the agenda and set up a nice little oligarchy that would reward all of their cronies who helped them in their coup d'etat, you might as well say, is what it was, toward the American people. And everyone should have been wise to him when Cheney, even before being sworn in, you remember this, many of you do, he bragged to the press that they were going to, quote, restore the power of the executive branch, unquote. He wasn't kidding. They were going to make the Oval Office the seat of power of the government, and to hell with the House, to hell with the Senate, to hell with the court, and most of all, to hell with the wishes of the people of the United States of America, because after all, the people only exist to serve their masters. And Cheney, through Bush, was and is the master. Don't kid yourself into thinking anything else about these people. But what I really resent most of all is the way they assumed the throne. The way they set out to fool the people by a massive plan of lies and deceptions. And they appealed to what I always call the inherent goodness of millions of voters. And they posed Bush as this godly, spiritual saint of a man whom God had taken by the hand and was leading him to do all that was right and good for the citizens of this country. They really put that persona, that aura out there. That's how they did it. They appealed to those people who thought having a president who's one of them, you know, a good family man who goes to church on Sunday and seek the guidance of God Almighty in his daily life. They appealed to those people of faith who wanted to believe that Bush was sincere and at least spiritually one of them. They solicited the help of the Robertsons and the Falwells and the Dobsons and nearly every Baptist preacher in the South and those of many other denominations as well to get their flocks to vote this godly man into office. Oh yes, he was divinely inspired, and he would lead America to the spiritual promised land. He would lead us to milk and honey. And with his mighty sword, he would vanquish all of our enemies, and most of all, he would restore honor and dignity to the White House after it had been defiled by Bill Clinton. This was the new dawning, the second coming. You might have thought Bush was dressed in a white robe with his arms outstretched to the people with a halo above his head, a reformed sinner who understood the trials and tribulations of the average man. And he was average, after all, because he had the vocabulary and the speaking ability of the average third grader, and they thought that was just a picture of innocence. With this man on the throne, he could do away with those evil sinners, those liberals who have ruined America, those decadent people who delight in killing as many babies as possible, who want to allow gays to have sex in the street and gasp, "Get married." They wanted to send secret police into your home and take your guns, and most of all, those evil liberals wanted to make you pay so much tax that you wouldn't have enough left over each week to afford food for your table. But they, the Bush administration, they were going to make everything all right in the world. They were going to make us all wealthy, lead us all to a godly existence, and protect us from all evil. That's what they sold the people. That is what they sold them. Well, fine. Except the evil was them. The evil wasn't from outside the gates. They were the enemy from within. They didn't have to crash the gate. They had the keys to it, the keys to the weapons of war, the keys to the treasury, the keys to the vault where the documents protecting your rights as a citizen are kept. They have ruled with an iron fist, and hardly anyone has attempted to stop them until now. Just recently, I've started to see a little spine from a few people who needed to get one desperately. Finally, America's waking up from this. If you'll pardon the term, waking up from this long national nightmare that is the Bush administration. At least two-thirds of Americans have now finally figured out who the real enemy is. They've finally awoken from their slumber, and they've seen the graft and the corruption, the unbelievable incompetence and downright evil that's taken place in these last 5 years under the Bush administration. The dominoes are starting to fall, and I told you from the outset that they would. Myself and some others I know were shouting it from the very beginning that this was a gang of smash-and-grab thieves that would fleece America for all they could get away with, and they have fulfilled my prediction. They have made it come true. Well, and they've done it, but now it's time to pay the piper. The question is, will they be held accountable for their crimes against America? There are those remaining who believe in these people. But will the hue and cry from the rest of the people overshadow those who keep silent? Will the awesome power this administration has amassed be able to save them? Will it? I like to think that the decent people of America will come to their senses and understand that these people have got to be brought to justice for the good of the country. Those who are saying that if the Democrats take back the House and the Senate, they should just allow the Bush administration officials to finish out their terms and go away, those people are dead wrong. Dead wrong. They want to make nice? No. Absolutely not. We need to make examples of these people. We need to show those who would try this again that the American people will not stand for this kind of corruption in their government ever again. They need to be dealt with so severely that no politician will ever again consider committing the kind of crimes these guys have perpetrated upon the American people. They need to be dealt with so severely that no future president will even consider sending us to war, killing and maiming thousands of our young men and women to satisfy some sort of sick, egomaniacal agenda. I urge everyone to demand that these people suffer the full measure of punishment offered by Lady Justice. It's the right thing to do for our country for now, and it's the right thing to do for our country for the future. I will not back any Democrat for office who doesn't share my opinion on that. But that's just me. 866-546-5254. We've got a few people on the line. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come right back.
So long as I'm a dictator. You're free, and freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Ah, yes, great big lies, and we're getting used to hearing those, aren't we? 3:30 on the Guy James Show, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. we'd be happy to have you join us this afternoon. Sitting here sucking on one of those Sucrets. I think I told everybody I went to the doctor the other day and having trouble with this newfound allergy of mine. So I go to the doctor and he loads me up with a whole bunch of prescription drugs, you know, and I go down to the CVS and get my prescription and I come home and I take what I'm supposed to take. And I think I feel a little better. I think I do. Well, that was on Tuesday. I'm right back to where I was. So I call the doctor this afternoon. And the receptionist answers the phone, and I say, you know what, I was in the doctor the other day, and he told me to call him if the prescription didn't work. I'm telling you, they're not working, and so I need to try something else. Well, you know, he's out till Monday, so I guess we'll go all weekend with no sleep. What the hell? We can do it. We've done it before. Hey, I promised you we'd go to the phones, 866-546-5254, and let's just do that right now. Hi, who we got with us?
You've got Dave, guy. And
hi, Dave.
Right on it today. I wanted to make you aware, one, that my dear friend up here, 92-year-old Alice, who sometimes calls you, she often listens with me to your program. She was trying to call you through the whole program yesterday, and your 866 line is thoroughly being messed with. Hmm. I don't know if you noticed it, but you didn't get calls yesterday.
No, not on that line. We didn't.
Well, you did get some, though?
Well, the phones were strangely silent yesterday, and so much so that I tried it myself after the program was over, and they seemed to work all right. So who knows? But Dave, I will tell you this: I had a couple of other people send me emails said they tried to call yesterday, and so I did. I went to some other phones and called my phones, and everything worked fine after the program. I have no way of knowing during the show, but.
Well, once you're off the air, it doesn't matter. They'll leave you alone. But you know, they have the kind of ethics. They would feel at liberty to do that kind of a thing. That misusing their power is totally consistent with their what you call sociopathic pathology. And
well, we ran into that last year out in Crawford, Texas, when we went out and did our program out there. We had one line to use, and we found out that they up the street were jamming the line for us, and really caused havoc with that broadcast that day.
Yeah, I remember that. But you do say it in a manner very clear, and I think that they don't like it in Washington. They don't like, the neocons don't like having their game exposed as accurately, as clearly as you do. So,
well, it is, in fact, their game. We know it's their game, and, you know, it's just going to be our job from now on just to put it out there for people to see and to hear, and if they don't take that and run with it and do their own research and find out the truth, then there's not a lot we can do about that. But we're going to do our best to get the truth out in front of folks. And by the way, we're having Clint Curtis on next week. He's the gentleman that's run against Tom Feeney here in Florida. And he's also the gentleman that Feeney tried to hire to hijack the Diebold machines. And so we're going to have him on.
Well, in fact, Finney did retain his Wang electronics there to design the program that would allow voting machines to maintain no record, and that could be accessed through a modem and have the votes changed, and it could not be proved. Clint Curtis thought he was designing it for the good guys. He was a Republican who thought, you guys are wanting to know if the Democrats can do this and cheat on you. Mrs. Wang then explained to him, oh, no, they fully intend to use these machines.
So. Well, we're going to have him on, next Thursday.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, Thursday. I will certainly look forward to that. I enjoy your programs every day. You spell it out so clearly. I wish everybody could hear it because they need to. We need to know what we're up against. I say our government has been stolen by hardcore criminals. They are psychopaths in my terminology. The extreme nature of their character disorder is such that they will do anything, you know? And they don't have the slightest regard for who they harm in the process.
Well, I think you're right. I couldn't agree more.
I think they get their kicks by causing us grief.
Well, they're certainly doing all they can. I think they know now that the public at least is getting a little bit wise to them. And they're doing what they can. You know, I often call them smash and grab folks, and I think they're doing more smashing and more grabbing and as fast as they can before they get swept out. But, you know, the problem is, Dave, as I mentioned the other day, now that the public is wise to them, and now that there is a possibility of sweeping them all out of office this fall, I hope, their legacy is going to last a long time with all the judgeships that they've filled. The effects of this administration is going to be felt for a long, long time in this country, and that's the shame of it all.
The harm that they have done will live after them, and indeed, I have no question of that. And if we don't find a way to make sure that this election is an honest one, it'll be the end of this country, I fear.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. Thanks for your call, Dave.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. All righty, let's see. Let's go over to the other line here and see what we have. Hello.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Well, hello, Juanita.
Hi, I was just wanting to call and let you know that I tried to call you yesterday also a number of times, and the phone just, it would dial, and then it just didn't ring.
Hmm.
And I checked to see if it was my phone, and I got other calls out and everything, so I don't know. I thought maybe you had it turned off and didn't know it or something.
No, I suspect there was something funny business going on. It wouldn't be the first time.
You never know, do you?
No, it wouldn't be the first time. We've had two absolutely verified incidents of that happening over the
years.
Really? Yes.
Nothing surprises me. Well, I don't know. They do surprise me quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They seem to come up with all kinds of things that you never thought about before. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I had the same problem yesterday.
All right. Well, that is good to know. And you know, as long as we're speaking about this to everybody, to anybody that has a problem with the phones, I hope you'll shoot us an email. GuyJames@theGuyJamesShow.com. If you're having trouble with the stream, I know some people have dial up, and we've tried to make the stream accessible to everybody. We could have it set it at a higher quality, but then people with dial up wouldn't be able to get it. So we think we're providing a pretty good stream signal.
So far, I've been very fortunate to be able to get it. So you know,
good. Are you on dial up?
No, I'm.
You on cable?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, the cable.
I was trying to think what it was, yeah.
Yeah, the cable folks do better. And since we've got the quality of it lowered, I don't want to get too technical about it. Of course, I wouldn't dare get too technical about it, because then I wouldn't know what I was talking about. But
a couple of weeks ago, I got on, and I thought, oh, I can't get a show, you know, and I kept on trying everything, and then I saw the little note you had that you wouldn't be on that day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we got...
been trying about an hour to see what's wrong with this situation here.
We're trying desperately to shake this crazy allergy stuff we've got going on. You know, did you ever have
everybody,
that?
Everybody.
Eyes watering, nose itching, and water, you know, running. And...
I think it's something in the air, and you know.
Well, I hope it goes away quick. It's
by the way, let me say something about what I wanted to say yesterday was about that thing they're building over in Iraq.
Oh, the 104-acre largest embassy in the world?
Yeah, that made me think about the allergy thing. It made me think about, you know, back when they first asked for all that money, they wanted all these expensive garbage trucks and so forth.
Ah, yes.
Remember that?
Oh, yes.
A couple of years ago, and I said, no, we're not going to let you do that. And, you know, when they were asking for all this money. And I thought then that they're trying to build a place over there, just Shangri-La, and they don't give a happy what happens to us, and they don't give a happy what happens to the rest of the world either. They just want their own little paradise.
Well, it's going to be their own.
I thought that then, you know, they wanted all those fancy garbage trucks, and I forget what all else, but that stuck in my mind about the garbage trucks.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're going to have it all first class. They're going to have you know, fancy quarters for people to live in and so forth. But, you know, that's way beyond what an embassy is. This is going to be their headquarters for the Middle East.
But that's their little empire, you know. It's going to be perfect for them.
Sure.
And the rest of us, you know, they pollute our air and our water and everything else, you know, probably already do.
Right you are.
So that's what, yeah.
Hey, thanks for calling, Juanita. Good to hear from you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-546-5254. We'd like to hear from you today. And, you know, speaking of what Juanita was saying there, about this billion-dollar, God, billion-dollar, 104-acre embassy. That's the size of Vatican City, by the way, as we mentioned yesterday. 104 acres. Now, I'm a farm boy, so I can visualize 104 acres real well. For an embassy? Come on. Have you ever been to Embassy Row in Washington? It's an interesting place to see. Some of the embassies in Washington got big walls around them and so forth, and are very secretive, and the Korean embassy, man, oh man, they've got antennas up. It looks like the NSA, but they've just got antennas, big huge antennas. They make no bones about it, and it's not that far from the National Cathedral. But if you ever get a chance to go to Washington and you're around DuPont Circle, why, take a little turn there in DuPont Circle and head on up toward Embassy Row. It's a fascinating thing to see, and I would encourage everybody that hasn't been to Washington, D.C., to go there, spend a few days, and take a good look around. It's a fascinating city, absolutely fascinating. You never know who you're going to run into. Great food, hotels that don't charge you all that much, and a great public transportation system. You can get around that town I forget what they call it. It's not the People Mover. I think that's in Detroit. Can't think what they call the subway, but it's just a fabulous subway system. It goes all the way out to Pentagon, to the Pentagon City, and to Union Station, and it's really great. And if you ever do get a chance, I might also mention, if you can get a special pass from your congressman or your senator, that little railway they've got down underneath the Capitol building that goes over to the Senate office buildings, and you can take this little tram over underneath the Capitol building. That's pretty doggone interesting, too. Anyway, enough for the travel log here today. We were talking about this 104-acre embassy, which is, it's absurd. I mean, there's no question about that. I ran across this this article. Where do we find this? I don't know. I have to look this up where we found it. A contractor in Iraq has pleaded guilty to providing money, sex, and designer watches to U.S. officials in exchange for more than $8 million, $10.8 million, actually, in reconstruction contracts. Philip Bloom faces up to 40 years in prison after admitting paying more than $2 million in bribes to U.S. officials with the Coalition Provisional Authority, which ruled Iraq after the U.S.-led invasion in 2003. Bloom's guilty plea on bribery and money laundering charges is the latest development in a widening corruption scandal centered on a network of U.S. civilians and military officials who worked out of a coalition outpost in the south-central Iraqi town of Hilla. Under the plea agreement, Bloom must pay $3.6 million in restitution and forfeit $3.6 million in assets. That's odd. That's the same. Anyway, his guilty plea sends a message to Iraqis that U.S. oversight will track down, arrest, and prosecute American citizens who committed crimes in Iraq involving Iraqi money, says Stuart Bowen, who heads the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. Philip, that's all well and good, and I'm glad you're on the, glad you're tracking down some of this, but you got any idea what happened to that $2 billion in cash that came up missing? It's totally unaccounted. $2 billion? I mean, I know $3.6 million is a lot from this guy, but $2 billion? It said the scheme with this Philip Bloom began in January 2004, when Bloom began paying bribes to Robert Stein, a civilian contractor who controlled $82 million in reconstruction funds as the comptroller for the coalition's headquarters in Hilla. Stein, who had a previous conviction for fraud when he was hired, boy, they check these guys out well, don't they? He pleaded guilty to accepting bribes in February. He funneled money and favors from Bloom to other officials in Hilla, all of whom helped direct contracts to a group of companies controlled by Bloom, court documents say. Now, here's the interesting part. Two officers in the U.S. Army Reserve, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Wheeler and Lieutenant Colonel Deborah Harrison, have already been arrested in connection with the case, and more arrests are expected, investigators say. From January to June 2004, when the coalition government was replaced, Bloom provided Stein and officers with first-class air tickets, real estate lots, hope not in Baghdad, weapons, new four-wheel drive vehicles, cigars, designer watches, alcohol, and prostitutes at Bloom's Baghdad Villa, and cash bribes. And in return, Bloom's company, Global Business Group, received $8.6 million in contracts to refurbish a police academy in Hilla, a library in Karbala, and other reconstruction projects. In some cases, the work was never done, and in others, it was shoddy. Well. Interesting. Graft and corruption. Wherever there's war, there's always graft and corruption. But isn't it something that they're grabbing this guy and these two high-ranking American Army personnel, and they're prosecuting them, and they'll go to federal prison for all this, and this Bloom guy, he'll go to federal prison for all of this. But the guy that started the whole shebang, the guy that initiated the shock and awe that allowed this graft and corruption to go on in the first place, why, he's attending state dinners in the White House. I don't get that. I really don't get that. It's like arresting Al Capone's henchmen and letting Al walk. I don't know. I don't think I'll ever quite understand all of that. I really don't think I will. Hey, we're going to pause for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of the Guy James Show. And I do want to remind you, 866-546-5254. And we've got a couple of lines open.
Strong, do it in the name of God. Destroy the world around you as if it were from by you. Do it in the name of God.
My country is the man, my countrymen are mankind. I am in earnest.
Excuse the cries of chieftains, pretended as for the world, do it in the name of God. On the streets they're starving, the altar from the carving, do it in the name of God. Drink a magic cocktail, if it makes you feel it, do it in the name of God. Build a gun, it can fix your ignorance, it will. Do it in the name of God.
In the name of God.
In the name of God.
Mr. Bear, take it from over there. Do it in the name of God. Place weapons in the sky, your enemy wants to fly. Do it in the name of God. All praise the stars and stripes, to see God in our lives. Do it in the name of God. Build another bomb, drop it on someone. Do it in the name of God.
We're not going to play around. We do have your phone. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, we'll contact your local authorities, and you will be held accountable.
Why, you ill-mannered sack of crap!
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Yes, O'Reilly of Fox Network. Tony, please give the job to Tony Snow. Are all of you writing the White House, calling the White House, petitioning your congressman, your Republicans? Get the press secretary job. Get it to Tony Snow. Absolutely get it to Tony Snow. He's my guy. I want Tony Snow to have that job in the worst old way. I really do. And why not? I mean, you want a spinner out there. You want someone that'll just absolutely fawn and schmooze over the president. Why, he's your guy. He'll take anybody from Fox Network. They'll do that. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, O'Reilly's been doing this thing about threatening people, about sending the Fox security people to their house. Hell, now if Fox gets their foot in the door, well, they've already got their foot in the door, but if Fox gets their guy in there as the press secretary, O'Reilly might be able to sic the Secret Service on people. At least he'd threaten to, don't you think? Yeah, Bill, yeah. Boy, doesn't Keith Olbermann have a lot of fun with him. I'll bet you that O'Reilly rues the day he ever started in on Keith Olbermann. I'll bet you he does. I've seen O'Reilly take the measure of Al Franken. I've seen him run right over him a couple of times, O'Reilly has. But you're not going to do that to Keith Olbermann. And old Keith is doing a pretty fine job lately, I think. I like that show of his. I really do. And I know a lot of you watch it, too. I get a lot of email from folks. Gee whiz, I'm getting these home remedies for allergies. I hope some of them work. I don't know about this one, knocking twice and turning upside down, and I don't know about that one. I went out to the drugstore today, and I bought me a box of Kleenex. Actually, it's not Kleenex. It's the private brand of the drugstore. That sucker is so big, I could barely carry it out to the car, and I think they're half gone already. I hope I don't sound too bad. I know I've got a little bit of that stuffiness in there, but... Yeah, there's that big box of Kleenex. I've never had a box of Kleenex that big. I didn't know. And there I go, calling it Kleenex. Tissues. That would be the proper thing to say. Tissues. You know, yesterday we were talking about the war on terror. And we were talking about the case of Luis Posada Corrales. And what we forgot to mention during that, and I couldn't think of his name at the time, here we are having this war on terror, and are we not fighting a war on terror? Why is it the United States of America is refusing to bring a terrorist who's in our possession to justice? The handling of the case of Luis Posada Corrales does make a mockery of both the Bush administration and the news media's creation and propaganda of the so-called war on terror. One of Posada's accomplices, and this is the name that escaped me for a while yesterday, one of his accomplices... was Orlando Bosch. And I know probably most of my listeners know who Orlando Bosch was. He was pardoned by the first Bush regime back in 1991. He was interviewed last week by a Miami TV reporter. And here's an example of what our own terrorists, see, we've got our own terrorists in this country, a bona fide absolute admitted terrorist. This Juan Manuel Cao, the interviewer, said in that action, talking about Bosch's action, 76 persons were killed. Actually, the correct figure is 73, including a pregnant passenger. Orlando Bosch says, "No, Chico. In a war such as us Cubans who love liberty wage against the tyrant, you have to down planes. You have to sink ships. You have to be prepared to attack anything that is within your reach." And the reporter says, "Is this what?" No, he didn't say that. Is this what Americans are dying for in Iraq for? Is this what we're preparing for war with Iran for? Ask yourself, how in the world can we support terrorists and claim to be waging war on terror? Cal says, if you ran into the family members who were killed in that plane, wouldn't you think it difficult? And Orlando Bosch, remember this, this is our terrorist that we support over in Miami, living the high life. He says, no, because in the end, those who were there had to know they were cooperating with the tyranny in Cuba. These were civilians flying on a Cubana airline. This is the guy that was pardoned by George Herbert Walker Bush, former director of the CIA. And Posada, he might very well be pardoned by George W. Bush at the end of his term. That's an amazing story, don't you think? We have a known terrorist. Helped bring down a plane and kill 73 civilians. And we're protecting him over in Miami. Interesting place, Miami. And speaking of crooks, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. This Representative Kurt Weldon, you know, he's been out crowing about this. What was the name of the story? I can't think what he called it. Anyway, getting all the FaceTime he could. It turns out that Representative Weldon, you know, he's from Pennsylvania, a powerful member of the House Armed Services Committee. Turns out he's been good friends to the Italian firm Finmeccanica, and it appears that his good deeds on behalf have been rewarded. Weldon was a, quote, key supporter of a long-shot bid by Finmeccanica helicopter unit Augusta Westland to land the $1.6 billion contract to build the next presidential helicopter, a bid it ended up winning. Well, now Harper's Magazine is reporting that Augusta Westland has hired Weldon's daughter, Kim. The firm claims that she got the job in the normal way, but Melanie Sloan of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, whom we had on this program last week, she's doubtful. It says, it seems incredibly unlikely that Weldon's daughter was the one candidate that they happened to pick. And she also got a job with Boeing, which is one of the congressman's major campaign donors. So these boys just, they just go all out, don't they? She worked for Boeing at one time and later became a high-powered lobbyist who built her company on her father's connections. Another family friend of Weldon's was hired by Otto Malara, yet another subsidiary of Finmeccanica, and by several other firms with close ties to the congressman as well. So this Mr. Clean, Mr. Kurt Weldon of Pennsylvania, Republican congressman, he's been having a good old time getting his relatives. Man, wouldn't you love to know the entire group, how much they're really screwing the American public. Wouldn't it be interesting to know? You bet it would. Hey, we're going to stop for news at the top of the hour. We'll be back. Don't you go anywhere.
Five policemen and two bodies of four Iraqis were discovered. In Nepal, the king has vowed to return political power to the people, but protesters say that doesn't go far enough. They also want curbs on the king's constitutional powers. A curfew extension was put into effect Friday after three died and dozens were wounded in yesterday's mass protests. In Afghanistan, Taliban insurgents fired on an allied patrol and attacked a police post in Kandahar on Friday. Six police and one U.S. soldier were killed in those attacks. Israel's acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has accepted an invitation for a diplomatic visit to Egypt. Egypt's president says he wants to broker a peace deal between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. It would be the first meeting of the two leaders since Egypt arranged an Israeli-Palestinian ceasefire in 2005. Israel says its troops may reoccupy the Gaza Strip if Palestinian military aggression continues. Israel withdrew from the area last September after 38 years of occupation. Palestinian militants have stepped up cross-border rocket attacks into Israel since Hamas was elected into office. In New Orleans, the first post-Katrina mayoral election will be held tomorrow. There are more than 20 candidates on the ballot, and unless one of them receives more than 50% of the vote, there will be a runoff election between the top two vote-getters on May 20th. President Bush is on his way to the West Coast for a four-day visit. He'll stop at Cisco Systems in San Jose to take part in a panel on American competitiveness. Protesters are gearing up to heckle the president at his various stops. In Washington, U.S. transportation officials are warning Muslim extremists may be targeting private jets. Aircraft owners and airport managers are being asked to boost security. Officials found an internet posting that urged Muslims to, quote, identify, follow, and destroy private civilian American aircrafts in all the airports of the world. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The European Union's Trade Commissioner is blaming the U.S. for a deadlock on global trade negotiations. Some fear U.S. demands for sweeping farm tariffs will stall diplomatic talks in Geneva. The president of the U.S. Business and Industry Council says he's disappointed the White House made no progress in trade talks with China. The National Association of Manufacturers calls Thursday's summit a, quote, missed opportunity. Boston Scientific today completed its $27 billion acquisition, Guidant, making it the world's largest maker of heart devices. Boston Scientific and rival Johnson & Johnson were engaged in a bidding war for weeks to purchase Guidant. In Michigan, Ford Motor Company lost $1.2 billion in the first quarter as it begins a restructuring effort. That's a loss of 64 cents a share. Ford sales fell 9% from 1 year ago. McDonald's first quarter profit fell 14%, the company's biggest drop in 4 years. As crude oil prices reached a new high of $75 a barrel Friday, pump prices skyrocketed to an average of $2.85 a gallon. That's up 3 cents from Thursday and more than 60 cents higher than a year ago. Near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 6 points. The Nasdaq was down 24 points. The S&P 500 was down 3 points. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
God bless America.
That's the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hi, yes, welcome back. Welcome back for the second hour of the Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. It's a beautiful day here, a little bit over 90 degrees today. And hey, we've got a lot of pet lovers that listen to the show. I appreciate all the emails I get asking about the new puppy, Kukla. And thank you for that. That's very nice of all you folks to write in and ask about how the little Yorkie's doing. Doing good. Weighs about 3.5 pounds now. Really a monster of a dog. And loves to push a ball around. You ever seen a little dog do that? Get a ball at the end of its nose, you know, like something about the size of a basketball, and this little 3-pound dog runs as fast as it can, pushing the ball with its nose. Absolutely hilarious. Just, I don't know why I got started on that, but anyway, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for asking about that, and thanks for all your well wishes for this allergy problem. Oh, anyway. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. If you've never called in before, give us a call today. We heard from one of our old friends from Toledo yesterday after the program was over. Been having some health problems up there, and hope you'll call in today. Anyway, we're glad to have anybody along with you. We often talk about the economy, and the Bush people often talk about the economy, and I heard the news there over the break about them talking about Bush not making any progress with Mr. Hu of the Chinese on trade talks. They don't really let him go in and talk about foreign trade with these people, do they? I mean, they really wouldn't do that, would they? I mean, you know Bush wouldn't know what the hell he was talking about if he talked about any kind of foreign trade whatsoever. I hope not. I mean, I hope there's somebody in there leading him around the hand. But you know, this guy comes over here with the checkbook, like we mentioned yesterday. They said, oh, he's here, you're going to spend a lot of money. And they're really doing a PR campaign is what it is. China, we're indebted to China. The second most amount of money as anybody. I think number one is Japan. Second is China, and they're starting to call the shots. They've devalued. Their currency is devalued real well, where they're just making out like fat rats on the trade, and people are buying more and more cheap Chinese goods and more jobs going overseas. Meanwhile, there are more. You know, I heard the Chinese say something that was fascinating to me yesterday. They're trying to get the people in the country, and you just don't hear this. They're trying to get the people over there to stop saving so much money. It is said that the average Chinese worker saves somewhere between 40 and 45% of their pay. Can you imagine being able to save 40 to 45% of their pay? That in and of itself is a remarkable thing, being able to save that much. Most people in this country couldn't save that much, no matter what. But they're urging them to spend their money so that they can buy more American goods. Now, isn't that just like we Americans go, hey, spend your money, buddy, and we'll send you some American stuff. They're the largest market for American goods now. And so we want the Chinese people to stop saving their money and buy American goods. And that way, maybe we can get back a tiny fraction a tiny fraction of whatever it is we spend over there. Our trade deficit with them is something in the order of, well, it's over $200 billion, I believe. Whoa. Fantastic numbers. Fantastic numbers. But I think as far as this, the trade and the economy and all that, I really believe America is adrift on the wrong path. And I admit I'm definitely not the one to solve the problem. But I am smart enough to see what the problem is. half of the wealth, and I've been doing a lot of research on this, half of the wealth of the richest country in history, which is us, half the wealth belongs to fewer than 2% of the citizens. Think of that. 50% of all the wealth in this country belongs to 2%, less than 2% of the people. And each year, that 2% gets even more. They get more and more and more. The wealthiest 1% of American households earns 20% of all the income, holds 33.4% of all the wealth. This is the top 1%. And owns, this I found this to be startling, the top 1% owns 44.9% of all stocks by value. So when they talk about the stock market going up and benefiting the average American, no, yeah. 45% of all stock value is controlled by the top 1% of the people. And that's according to the Economic Policy Institute, and it's a great organization to come out with the numbers. They crunch numbers all day, every day, 365 days a year. So if you take this a step farther, and let's just suppose, for the sake of supposing, but it's pretty close. Let's say we have 300 million people in this country, and we're awfully close to it. So you divide it up into five equal portions of 60 million each, all right? And you arrange the membership of these five groups by wealth, the poorest up through the richest. The middle portion would be the middle class. The middle portion, that's 60 million people in the so-called middle of the economy here in the United States, holds only 3.9% of the nation's wealth. 3.9% the middle 60 million have. It's incredible. And even more incredible, the bottom 90% of Americans own barely more than a quarter of America. Imagine that. The bottom 90% owns barely more than one quarter of America. And as far as these taxes, you know, people like to talk about and complain about progressive taxes. Think of it this way. If two people owned half of a skyscraper in New York City, let's just take the Empire State Building. If two people owned a half of that building, were half owners of it, we might expect that they'd be paying for about half of the building's security and the infrastructure support costs. Wouldn't you think that'd be right? They own half the building, they're responsible for half the expenses. But the way we tax people, the 2% that owns half of the country has persuaded our government and bought our government so that they all almost nothing on accumulated wealth, regardless of the upcoming needs of the country and the hunger in the world. And moreover, they're adamant that they should pay the same flat tax on income as even the poorest amongst them. You know, this is the burden of America the wealthy are willing to share. This is the Republican way. And I tire of saying this and alleging this, and we consider ourselves a godly nation. Tell me now, can any of you students of the Bible cite some biblical passages that says a few people should own the earth? Can anyone believe God endorses such monumental greed as we have in this country? I think a nation this unfair in its governance, and this a nation this immoral in the disbursement of its gifts and opportunities might start losing support from up above, if I were to think of it in a logical manner. And oh so sadly, we have embraced a Republican sponsored corporatist philosophy in this country that's reshaped our language, it's distorted our most basic notions of equity and equality, and made us a willing partner in our own destruction. For the past several decades, America has been blessed every year with increase. And yet more and more we concentrate our treasures in the hands of a very few. Even as our economic policies are encouraging the flight of our jobs and cause the dissolution of our middle class, this Republican corporatist philosophy makes us feel personally responsible for failing in a game that's absolutely rigged. We can't share in the wealth our labor's created. The game is rigged. You know, take, for example, the corporate profits, and I don't want to bore you with a lot of numbers, but corporate profits grew 40% in real terms between the first quarter of 2001 and the second quarter of 2004. 40% corporate profits. Remember who I said owned 44.9% of all the stock value in this country, the top 1%. So corporate profits grew 40% between the first quarter of 2001 and the second quarter of 2004. Yet in the same time frame, wages and salaries grew by only about 0.3% in real terms. 40% in corporate profits up, 0.3% in wages and salaries. So here we are after 4 years of serial tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy. This year's income tax cuts alone will amount to what's basically an unfunded $47 billion gift to the richest 1% of the people whose incomes average about $1 million a year. $47 billion. Think about that for a minute. For a few months last year, our country found ourselves in arguing about how stingy we might appear to be in response to the disastrous tsunami. And finally, we made a disreputable international display of increasing their giving to an amount that eventually totaled to be about $1 billion. What's horribly wrong with this scenario is that America didn't have $1 billion for the tsunami victims, or even the $47 billion that it's given away to its own wealthy people. We have to borrow both sums, the $1 billion for the tsunami and the $47 billion for the tax money to give back to the filthy rich in this country. We've got to borrow both of those sums from Japan and China and add those debts to the current deficit. The interest on the debt for these two gifts, I guess you'd call them, will be paid by the next generation of Americans, and the base debt will remain until the nation has the intellectual honesty to overturn this generational theft, and that is exactly what's going on right now. Are America's greedy Republican corporatists a bunch of self-indulgent hypocritical thieves? I think they are. Because they borrow from the nation's children to give themselves an additional $47 billion a year in tax cut and make this this great Christian display about a one-time gift of another billion for the tsunami victims, that they won't be paying for that either. Are America's greedy Republican corporates a bunch of self-indulgent hypocritical thieves? I think the question answers itself. Corporatist Republicans increasingly own and control a consolidated media. They've won control of the presidency, the House, the Senate, and the K Street. You all know about K Street. Their philosophy of private ownership extends to the schools and education. And the great success they've had at deregulating competition has resulted in a terrible income inequality. And we've talked about this so much. This income inequality right now is at levels not seen since what we called the Gilded Age, back around the 1880s with the Mellons and the Rockefellers and those folks and their fabulous wealth at the time. When corporatists own government, which is what privatizing the government does, will any other political party ever be possible? You know, when you consider the magnitude of corporate gratitude and campaign funding that would result from privatizing Social Security, and you know how they're talking about that, a program that manages billions of dollars every year, whatever else might happen, you can be certain that privatizing Social Security will transfer a significant amount of wealth from retirees to the Wall Street brokers and the Republican coffers. That's exactly what will happen, and that's what they wanted to happen. And when corporatists own the schools, again, that's what privatizing education is. Corporatists owning schools, we've got them right here locally. Will any philosophy but Republican corporatism be taught in those schools? Why would it be? The dissembling language and false value of the money changers has blinded us. It's bewildered us. It's turned us against one another in some sort of a misdirected political rhetoric, and it distorts our most cherished values of freedom and self-reliance and spiritual responsibility to one another. This Republican corporatist-driven national policy, the flagrant commercial greed of a few, and the stifling of other people's national dreams and aspirations, not democracy or freedom or Christianity, has made our country and policies the target of foreign powers and earned us absolute disdain and even hatred in foreign lands. Our national claim of equality, of freedom, and liberty isn't supported by our actions at home, where, by the way, we are stifling freedom. And it doesn't help our case that we spend $500 billion a year on our military. $500 billion a year in our military, an annual investment larger, think about this, than the entire economy of Russia. And we only spend $5 billion on the State Department in support of diplomacy. 100 to 1. 100 to 1. 100 to 1 we spend on war against diplomacy. That shows where our real priorities are. It shows where this administration's priorities are. And we've turned America into some sort of an endless race in which most people struggle just to survive. Because almost everything belongs to just a few. And the rules, the financial rules and the tax rules, support the already wealthy. I think everybody has to understand that the deck is absolutely stacked against those not on the upper rungs of the ladder. You know, we've turned our military into torturers, and we've rewritten the mandate to create an armed CIA with almost no congressional oversight. We ignore professional reporting of Iraqi casualties while making our own casualties nearly invisible at Dover, Delaware. Don't want anybody to see those caskets. And in the name of civil liberties, we've embraced this crazy Patriot Act and empowered a secretive imperial executive to extinguish our individual rights. And make no mistake, that's what they're doing. The Republican neocons have a plan for Social Security that would turn America into an investment club. This notion of an ownership society is a sham. And it'll reduce our claims in America to pieces of paper, mere stocks managed by professional gamblers who, of course, will always take their cut on Wall Street, whether the investments they make in our names win or lose. They'll always get their cut. That's what this is all about. It's a mess. You know, since the richest 2% own more than the bottom 97% of the country, what do you do about that? You know, one's class position really matters. Your class really does matter. It greatly determines your health. It determines how long you live, where you live. It determines whether or not you've got a greater exposure to crime or not, your success in school. and most likely even the success of your children in school. The extent of inequality in America has tremendous ramifications for the type of society we share. And I read a study by the American Political Science Association that concluded that the inequality in income and resources translates into inequalities in participation and effectiveness in our democracy. So as we shape the economy and oversee income distribution, we're also shaping the very nature of our democracy. I can't remember for sure, but I think it was Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. I'm fairly sure it was him, who said, "You can have a nation's wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, or you can have democracy, but you cannot have both." And I think he's right. And I think we're giving up more and more of our democracy as the wealth is more and more funneled to just a very select few in this country. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Give us a call.
Sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Get sent over, just deliver death. Just shuttling soldiers to mothers weeping breasts. Just over, back and forth. Just knock knocking at your door. Jets of death, they fly for us. Oh, say, can you see by dawn's early light, missiles gleaming while our Eskimo cowboy sleeps at night? Jets in the Dover.
C-120 transport jet touched down this morning at Dover Air Force Base in Dover, Delaware, burying the bodies of three U.S. soldiers who were killed in separate attacks on Wednesday. The deaths brought to 91.
The deaths brought to 300.
The deaths brought to 500.
The deaths brought to 700.
The deaths brought to 1,500. 2,400. 5,950. The number of soldiers killed in action since President Bush declared May 1st that major combat operations in the war were over.
Listen to me. The enemy is ruthless, and he is listening. He wants us all dead immediately.
There had been another attack on an American soldier in Baghdad today. The American soldier was patrolling the campus of Baghdad University when an assailant reportedly walked up and fired a shot into the soldier's head at point-blank range. A Black Hawk helicopter was called in to airlift the critically wounded soldier to a military hospital.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
Friends, just the other day I read a letter from a mother who said the world's a terrible place and I agree.
After we received the news that our son was killed in Iraq, and after we buried him, the Marines sent us his personal effects. I was crushed when I saw they had washed his clothes before they sent them to us. I had thought that I would be able to smell my son just one more time.
My answer is bring him on.
We will send the flow of tides, and we will kill for peace and strike at the enemy. See you.
Iraq?
Yes.
Bring them on. They can attack us. Bring them on. 87 billion. 87 billion dollars.
Yes. United States.
2,460.
United States.
5,550.
United States.
87 billion.
Killed in Iraq.
They can attack us.
Have prevailed.
Bring them on.
We buried them.
Say, are you a conservative Republican who believes George Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all of that, then you will certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and Social Security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the President's war, you are a super patriot, and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous words, "Bring 'em on." Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that, sovereign. You've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity, and therefore the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
And welcome back to the Guy James Show. Give us a call, just like he said there, 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you this afternoon. Someone sent me a great article. Don't want to read the whole thing, but it's by Paul Krugman, who I respect greatly. You know, a great writer, economy writer for the New York Times. And he writes that Americans have awakened to see that President Bush's leadership and policies are a failure, cloaked in a web of misleading rhetoric. He notes that Americans have rejected the conservative policies Bush has advocated since his election in 2000, and that recent polls show an American public yearning for a change in leadership. And to quote Paul Krugman here on the New York Times in an article called The Great Revulsion, "I have a vision, maybe just a hope, of a great revulsion, a moment in which the American people look at what is happening, realizing how their goodwill and patriotism have been abused, and put a stop to this drive to destroy much of what is best in our country." Paul goes on to say, "I wrote those words 3 years ago in the introduction to my column collection, The Great Unraveling. It seemed a remote prospect at the time. Baghdad had just fallen to U.S. troops, and President Bush had a 70% approval rating. But now the great revulsion has arrived. The latest Fox News poll puts Mr. Bush's approval only at 33%. According to the polling firm Survey USA, there are only four states in which significantly more people approve of Mr. Bush's performance than disapprove. And as you might know, my words, Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, and Nebraska. If we define red states as states where the public supports Mr. Bush, Red America now has a smaller population than New York City. Well, I just hope the Democrats can do something with that information. I really do. Like we said yesterday, I think the Democrats know how to govern, but they don't know how to win elections. And Republicans don't have a damn thing to do with the run. Or, you know, they don't know how to govern once they get in, but they're sure good at winning elections. Better turn it around this time. We're really better. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have with us?
Hey, good afternoon, guy.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. How about yourself?
Not bad.
What's your allergy doing?
Oh, well, still hanging around.
That's the first thing my wife said to me when she got up this morning was her allergy is just bothering her something terrible.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Tough to sleep.
Say, listen, you don't know of any place we can go to maybe get in on one of these oil wells someplace, do you?
Boy, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but there are a lot of states in the Union that has oil. Illinois, for one, has oil wells. And when I was a young man, there was quite a little oil boom in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Not far from where I lived. And a lot of those wells got capped, you know, because oil got down to $8, $10 a barrel and it wasn't worth producing anymore. I bet they're all running full strength now.
Yeah, I'd be taking my cap off. $75 a barrel. What's it going to be this summer?
Yeah, and you stop and think. If you've got a... I know a place in Ohio, a little burg called Edison, Ohio, that's got a, I suppose it's still there, got an oil well right in the middle of the schoolyard.
Is that right?
Yeah, I got the swing sets around it and all that sort of thing. It's got a fence around it and all, the old pumper does. But you stop and think, a lot of those little oil wells, of course, the owners of the land have leased the mineral rights to the oil companies, and the owners of the land, a lot of people know this, I suppose, get 1/8 of the oil that's pumped. So if you've got one that's just pumping a little dinky thing, is pumping, let's say, 20 barrels a day.
I can live off of it.
Yeah, that's almost $200 a day just in your pocket for nothing. If you've got one just pumping that. And they don't consider it a great well, I mean a really good well, unless it's pumping, you know, 800, 1,000 barrels a day anyway. But there was a lot of those little wells in Ohio that pumped, you know, 15, 20 barrels a day. And by the time they hauled it and you know, all the expenses, it wasn't worth it. But you betcha, at $75, there won't be any caps on any oil wells anywhere in America.
I think this is going to be one of the times when you load up the kids and head off for Cedar Point, it's going to cost you more for your gas tank than it is to get in the park.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people don't know that. Cedar Point's a wonderful amusement park up in Ohio. I think most people have known it. Right on the banks of the spectacularly clean Lake Erie. And a lot of people,
oh, yeah.
A lot of people don't know how clean Lake Erie is now, but it still is, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful, yeah.
All the jokes from many years ago about the Cuyahoga River being on fire in Toledo, and it was true. The lake was a mess.
Cuyahoga and Cleveland, guy. Cleveland. Right next to the stadium. Well, the old stadium, anyway.
Yeah.
Cuyahoga River.
Right. We're going back a ways now.
Yeah, we are.
But it's true. The river actually did catch on fire there.
Yeah, that's right.
And but my goodness, now the Lake Erie is just so clear you can... You know, you can see the bottom of it in places. It's just pristine, the last time I saw it, anyway.
Guy, I ask you, what do you think is going to happen with the dollar against other currencies, and how we're going to be able to, how long is these people going to be buying our debt?
Well, you know, that's...
That's what I really wanted to call you about today is...
Yeah, that's the big problem, because in a conversation I had very recently with someone very knowledgeable about the oil exploration business and the oil. In fact, the person worked in Dubai for quite a while. They're claiming that the OPEC is very definitely considering going to using the euro as their currency instead of the dollar. And if they do that, that is going to put the hurt on America's. The energy prices are going to go much higher than they are right now. And
I really don't believe we've seen anything yet.
No, I don't either. And you know, there's enough people around the world that hate us now that a little retribution by other countries against us economically is not going to bother a lot of people around the country. They're all going to look at us and go, hey, you had it coming.
It wasn't that way in the 60s and in the 70s and so, even in the 50s. I mean, we was looked at as a really great country. And, you know, I know a lot of foreigners. And you don't get the talk from them that you used to.
Oh, no.
You absolutely don't. I mean, it's just, you used to be able to say, you know, you like the song said, I'm proud to be an American.
Absolutely right. And it's changed considerably, and we're going to pay a price for it. I'm convinced we're going to pay a price for it. You know, we've been acting like the big bully on the block, and I think everybody remembers the old Our Gang comedies, the Butch, the bully. Sooner or later, all the little guys ganged up on him. And
I used to take in, well, you'd ask anybody in my family, they say, after Christmas, what's your favorite holiday? And mine was always the 4th of July. I just absolutely loved the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I'd go around and and set off different fireworks displays around. I used to set off $150,000 worth of fireworks. I mean, not small displays.
Wow.
Country clubs and the city and different places. And that was always my favorite holiday was the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A great one. And, you know, I was just telling somebody the other day, and somebody find out about this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we were talking about celebrating the 4th of July. I thought you brought this up. I think it's Vicksburg, Mississippi, that because of hard feelings left over from the Civil War, this is hard to believe, I believe Vicksburg, Mississippi, and again, if I'm wrong on this, somebody correct me, I am sure in my memory bank that Vicksburg, Mississippi refused to celebrate the 4th of July until the 1940s sometime.
Is that right?
I believe that's true, and if it's not true, somebody from Vicksburg, send me a nasty note and tell me I'm lying. But I somehow seem to remember that. I don't know.
I'll tell you, the people in the South, you travel down South. You know, I've been to Florida a number of times, and I only flew there once. But going through Tennessee and Kentucky and Georgia, you know, the places you'd stop and the people you'd meet, I don't understand the nicest people you'd want to meet.
But, absolutely, but
how they vote Republican like that, and it's against their best interest.
It most certainly is. The Republican Party has actually convinced people to vote against themselves. They have, and I'm afraid a lot of it's coming from the pulpit. And it absolutely coming from a pulpit. And actually, by the way, a lot of that's coming up in your state right now as well. Blackwell. Ken Blackwell, he's in cahoots with this Rod Parcell that's the head of this huge church down in Plain City, Ohio. I think it's Plain City. No, it's not. Well, anyway, right outside of Columbus.
Right.
And the guy's got a lot of money behind him and a huge church organization, and he's pushing old Blackwell real hard.
The Democrats are going to have to take and get up off their butts and give the Democrats voters something to come out for.
They certainly will. They certainly will.
Because I haven't seen anything yet, Guy.
No, not yet.
You know, to get you excited.
Not anything that's got me excited so far.
It's not like I'm not looking for it. I'm looking for it, but I just can't seem to find it.
Hey, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
It's great to hear from you, and I'm absolutely so happy that you're back on the air.
Well, we're glad to be here.
See you every day to boot.
Thanks very much.
All right, you take care, Guy.
Bye now. And let's see, who do we have on this line? Hello? Hello, do we have somebody on this line? By golly.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Can you
hear
me?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, okay. I didn't know how we were going to get through to you. But let me tell you something. We caught you this morning on our internet.
Mm-hmm.
First I caught you in the so-called news press free paper. With the wonderful little mailbag, thank God that they finally printed something worthwhile. And I read your letter.
Oh, they put it in, eh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, they never gave you a good column like somebody else. But we don't care. You're back. That's all we care about. Thank you so much for coming back.
Well, thank you.
We're going to try. we're going to try our darndest to keep you going and to get you really in front of the people, because this country is in terrible, terrible shape. We have senior citizens. We worry about what's happening to our country. I have never seen anything like it. That man at the helm is, what will I call him? No, I'll be a lady. He is dumb. He is stupid. He is dangerous.
Dangerous is the word.
Pardon me?
Dangerous is the word. I most definitely think the man is very dangerous.
Dangerous. And those around, because I don't think he has a thought in his brain that isn't given to him by his cohorts who back him. I consider him a puppet on
right.
a string.
Absolutely.
What can I say? I'm so thrilled to hear your voice. I used to listen to you all the time. Big deal, you're on 2 hours a week, 3 hours a week. That was too much for the idiots who don't have a brain in their head.
Well, it was threatening to him. It absolutely was threatening to him. But now we've got 2 hours a day every day, and we're thankful for it, and we're back doing our part, doing what we can.
We are thankful that you are on again, and we are going to send you something that we, you know, we can. We wish it could be more, but we definitely have your address. We will send you something, and please, please see what you can do, because obviously the Democrats, the Liberal Democrat, which I am and always have been all my life, are just sitting there. This is such a perfect time for them to be able to do something and tell the truth, because it is the truth.
That's right. The truth is, the truth is all we need. And armed with the truth, I'm going to go speak to the Greater Fort Myers Democratic Club this coming Monday night. I think it's the 24th. And
we're going to be held.
We're looking for that at the Palm Dinner Theater there on.
Oh. Oh, the Broadway Palm?
Yeah, Broadway Palm.
Oh, you're going to be there Monday night?
Yeah, Monday night. I think it's 6:30. I can't remember which, but right along
okay.
in there.
Okay, can we just go in?
I think so.
Okay, we'll try our darndest to get there.
Well, say hello.
I'm so glad. Thank you for coming back to us, and please, I don't know what we do, set a firecracker under those Liberal Democrats in the Congress, the senators, to do something. This is a perfect chance to do it.
Well, we're going to. Hey, thanks for your call.
I wish you well, and please stay with us and keep it coming.
Thanks very much.
Stay healthy.
Yep. Bye now.
Bye.
And this is always an adventure when you're running the studio by yourself. You don't know who's on the line. Who we have on this line?
Now you've got the other half of the family. Aren't you lucky today?
Yeah.
Well, look. You know, I got to tell you how I feel about you, and then you can decide what you want to do.
All right.
With you, we've got to start a groundswell for the Democrats, and we've really got to do it because you're telling it just like it is. Now, anything I could do besides making contributions to the show, which we will do financially in any way that we can, we will back you for anything that you plan to do as far as what your thinking is. Because this is the time for the grassroots to come out and really do something about what's going on in this country. People like us, I'm sure, are the majority in this country. And I'm talking about the well-educated middle class who doesn't want to take it anymore. And that's exactly what we've been doing. It's like that show that they had on television, I'm not going to take it anymore. That's what's happening to all of us in this country. And you are a man of reason and logic. And I wish I could sponsor you for president. I'd put you up for president. I wish you were political enough to run for president. I'd back you any way that I could. I'd back you. I'd campaign for you. I'd do anything I could to see that we got you elected.
Well, thank
and
you.
I appreciate that you're back, Guy. And we'll look forward to seeing with you on Monday night, because my wife just spoke to you, and so happy. I'm so happy I was able to speak to you, too. Thank you, Guy.
Thank
and
you.
I hope that you stay well, and we'll be trying to get there Monday night to be able to meet with you in person.
Thank you.
Anything we can do to help you in any way, shape, or form, we're here for you.
Well, say hello. We will see you Monday night. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Guy, yeah. And stay healthy.
Thank you. We're looking forward to that. A little bit of local business taking place here. We're going to speak at the Greater Fort Myers Democratic Club, a romp and stomping club down there. We've got some great Democratic clubs in the area here. Let me just take a moment, if all you folks around the country and around the world will indulge me for a moment or two. Lee County, Florida, where Fort Myers is, and Collier County, Florida, which is where Naples is, where they're adjoining counties, and I'm a member of a couple of the clubs, and had the greatest increase in Democratic votes. I think second and third, I think it is. Anyway, a fabulous increase in votes in the last election, and it's due to some hard-working club people. Now, I will say this, and I'm not being a hypocrite, because I've said it to their faces, and I'll say it again. That's no thanks to the state party. That's no thanks to the national party. That's thanks to the good old roll-up-your-sleeves, grassroots, netroots people that need to take the party back from the so-called professionals and run it the way it ought to be run, and run it on the principles and the foundation that was built years ago for the Democratic Party. It's time to forget all of the focus groups. It's time to forget all that razzmatazz. It's time to get back to basics, and it's time to get a candidate and get all of our candidates out there. Work like hell for them. And one thing I am going to talk about on Monday night, and I'll touch upon it briefly now, and some of you won't like this. I know some of you won't like this, because about a year ago on my program, I mentioned this, and I think I lost like 6 subscribers to the show immediately because I said this, but I'm going to say it again because I believe in being honest with you. And what I believe to be the truth, I'm always going to repeat it. We have got to stop being a single issue party, a party of people who promote single issues. We've got to become the party once again that promotes the Democratic Party, the basic fundamentals and principles of the Democratic Party, and then worry about our single issues after we get our people elected. We've got to work to get people elected that stand for the basic fundamental principles of the Democratic Party. And then afterwards, we want to work on our individual issues. We can do that. You put 100 Democrats together, and this is why we do not win elections. The Republicans take full advantage of this, and most of you know this. And all of you activists who are really strong on one issue, I want you to remember there are several issues. And forget your one issue for a while. Just forget it. Doesn't mean give it up. I'm not asking that. I'm asking Democrats to come together and elect Democrats. And then we'll work on our individual issues. That's the great vulnerability of the Democratic Party right now, because our tent is so big. We welcome everybody into the tent, and if we get 100 of us together and say, hey, what do we want to talk about? 100 hands go up, and we talk about 100 different things. And as somebody mentioned, it's like trying to herd a bunch of ducks. And we fight ourselves, and I could give you many examples of this. You know, if you're strictly, I know somebody that's strictly for getting the felons in Florida reinstated to vote again. That's an issue they're very passionate about. Fine. That's something that needs to be done. Other people care about only the pro-choice issue, and that's fine too. Be for that. And other people have issues with privatizing schools, all that. Great. But first and foremost, for now, if we don't want to get our asses taken to the cleaners again by the Republicans, we have to come together, and we have to be unselfish enough, all of us, because we've all got our pet issues that we like, but we've got to come together as Democrats first, get some good people elected, and then we can come forward and raise our hands and work on these single issues. Promise me you'll do that, won't you? I hope you will. I hope you'll consider that. I hope if you're one of these one, and I've been there. I know what the deal is. But the Republicans have used that to beat us upside the head with it year after year after year. Because as you know, If you get a bunch of Republicans together, you can talk about cutting taxes. You can talk about the abortion issue. What else? You can talk about privatizing schools. That's basically all you have to talk about. And they'll all say, okay, we'll just all band together and we'll work for those issues. They're not fragmented like we are. And therein lies the problem with liberal radio. You get your Limbaughs and your Hannitys on there, you only got to talk about two or three different issues. That's it. It interests all the Republicans. You try that talking to a bunch of Democrats and a bunch of liberals, you're gonna lose them. Because if you're not talking about the specific issue that a lot of people are involved in, they turn you off. And like I mentioned, I learned that the hard way. I did. But I recognize that is the great Achilles heel. On one hand, it's a wonderful thing that we have so many issues in our party that we're looking out for. On the other hand, it is our Achilles heel. And we've got to work hard this year, this terribly important year. Everybody take your boxing gloves off that you use for fighting against your fellow Democrats, because your issue you think is more important than the other guys. Let's just all stop that for a while. Can we do that? Can we put that aside? My issue's more important than yours? No, blah, 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 blah. No. Let's this year, the rest of this year, let's be united. Let's be a cohesive party, a party that goes after the big prize, and then we can start going after the issues, picking them off one by one by one, once we have the political power back in our corner. So I know it's a simple thing, and I also know Democrats. I are one, and I know how we think. And I know we'll go to a convention or a big seminar or whatever, and we'll fight like hell amongst ourselves. No, sir, you're going to listen to my issue. My issue's number one. Yours isn't. I've seen it 100 times, and you have too. And it's been why we've been getting our butts kicked in elections lately. So let's put a stop to it this year. Let's get it together. Let's put Will Rogers' old saying to rest. I don't belong to an organized party. I'm a Democrat. Let's prove that wrong, at least for this year. Let's get together. Let's work on winning this midterm elections, wherever you're at, the governorship in your state, whatever it may be. Let's do that. And then, I promise you, then we'll fight like hell to get our individual issues taken care of. And I know some of you got problems with that. I understand that. But that's the way it must be if we're going to be victorious, and we have to be victorious this year. Hey, I want to thank you for being along with us today. I've enjoyed your calls. Had a lot of good calls today. And I look forward to talking to you again tomorrow. So I want to remind you once again. Oh, no, it won't be tomorrow. It'll be Monday. Oh, my, the weekend off. Yeah. Have yourselves a great weekend. I plan to. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you Monday, everybody. Have a great weekend.